Production. Recorded live.
And I heard another voice from heaven saying, "Come out of her, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sins, and that ye receive not of her plagues. For her sins have reached unto heaven, and God hath remembered her iniquities." Fellow Adamites, we are seeing the cracks emerge in Babylon. We are seeing the cracks spread. I don't believe it will be too long now before we hear, "Babylon the great is fallen. And Yahweh willing, we shall all be there to witness it, and all the world shall bear witness to the power of Yahweh. If you have not begun to prepare for the things which are to come, the things which you are already starting to see happen, then you had best do so now. Now is the time to make preparations, gather supplies, make plans, and focus your efforts to keep on the straight and narrow path. Be right with the Heavenly Father, and He shall bring you through the plagues that await this doomed nation." Today is Sunday, November 29th, 2009. Bill Fink is joining us for the fifth installment of Germany and the Jewish Problem by F.K. Wiebe. How are you doing tonight, sir?
Hello, praise Yahweh.
Absolutely.
Hopefully this is the last installment of Germany and the Jewish Problem. Not that it hasn't been a good series. It has, but
we're out of material.
I'm looking forward to getting on to the Frankfurt School and talking about them, and that'll probably take a week or two.
And then maybe we can start a series on the riddle of the Jews' success and Russia number one.
Russia number one would be excellent to show that as early as 1919, the West understood the Jewish aspect of Bolshevism, but never did anything about it, and joined them in the destruction of Germany anyway.
Absolutely. And I've seen some Bolsheviks, modern Bolsheviks online, claiming that Bolshevism wasn't violent, and those are after-the-fact rumors started by people like McCarthy in the 40s and 50s. And this 1919 report shows that the West had ample knowledge that the Bolsheviks were murderous swine from day one.
Right. Absolutely. And that's very important to understand. Because it shows the power of the Jewish media and the Jewish purse strings and Jewish political manipulation to know that they knew all of this about Bolshevism in 1919. And in 1939, we just signed up with the Bolsheviks against our own Christian brethren in Germany.
And I've seen some British people online I get into arguments with, and I say, you know, why did the West ally with Stalin, arch-communist who wanted to take over the world and spread Marxism, you know, from country after country? They said, well, we didn't know how bad communism was. We didn't know the real deal. And I said, read Russia number one, a collection of reports on Bolshevism in Russia, 1919. Not only did you know, you knew the full extent, and you knew how horrible it was. The communists, the Bolsheviks, were basically, the Mongol horde. In modern times.
Right. And thanks to General Mosley, Russia number one is on my website. It's on my Mein Kampf website. And it's only up there in pictures because it's actually going to be a daunting task converting it to text. Yeah, you know, it's a big editing job, but it eventually will be text.
All right.
Okay. The Jewish Share in Immorality. Part 7 of Germany and the Jewish Problem by Dr. Wiebe. Even a strictly impartial and sober observer without any pronounced anti-Semitic views cannot any longer remain unimpressed by such examples of laxity and frivolity, which all point to typical Jewish indecent and immoral characteristics. At the same time, such characteristics are contrary to the spirit which animates all cultured nations. For all that, the reproach that the Jews are an inferior race, which these facts reveal, is so grave that it seems necessary to make a few further observations in this respect. It will be seen, however, as far as Germany is concerned, that everywhere where existing moral standards have been deliberately relaxed, where immorality was made into a business, Jews were prominent, if not dominant, in this work. Even the so-called sexual science, one of the unsavory products of the last century, was a purely Jewish invention and exploited by them into a most flourishing and lucrative branch of trade.
And the next paragraph, I don't really care for the opening sentences since he basically trashes the Bible as a work of sexual lasciviousness. And I think that's coming from a viewpoint, clearly he doesn't know Israel identity.
Well, he's even, you know, he's in the Jewish Encyclopedia, And he's probably himself, without realizing it, getting a lot of his thought on the Bible from Jews.
Shall we cover the next paragraph, or shall we go on to naming the publishers and then some specific examples of the works?
Well, go on.
All right. The authentic Jewish encyclopedia was even compelled to admit a marked racial sexuality in its co-religionists. Cautiously, it stated, the Bible itself contains many references to the fact that the sensual element in sexual intercourse was often very pronounced. The words of the prophets resound with complaints and threats in regard to adultery, of which one hears so much. Volume 5, page 384. With the advent of emancipation, this Jewish urge, restrained by the ghettos of the Middle Ages, poured forth into the public life of the state. A clear field, however, was only given to it when, as a result of the revolution in Germany in 1918, all barriers of law, order, and censorship were broken down. A veritable storm flood of Jewish immoral literature, obscene films and plays, then broke over Germany. Cinemas and theaters have already been exhaustively dealt with. It remains to be said that in literature, all authors of obscene works were Jews in every case. Among the hundreds of thousands of books confiscated by the National Socialists in 1933, very familiar names repeatedly cropped up. Together with publishing firms such as Benjamin Harz, Richard Jakobsthal, Leon Hirsch, M. Jakobson, or Jakobsthal and Company, mention must be made of the publishers of Kulturforschung, Cultural Research, a Vienna firm whose productions was sufficient to fill many libraries. The titles speak for themselves. Sittengatsche de Lastes, The Moral Story of Depravity, Sittengatsche de Schamlosigkeit, The Moral Story of Profligacy, Bilder Lexikon der Erotik, Illustrated Lexicon of Sexual Love, Sittengatsche de Skinheim und Verboten, The Moral Story of Secret and Forbidden Things, etc., etc. Among the publishers, the following must be recalled to mind: Dr. Ludwig Levi-Lenz, Leo Schidrotz, Dr. Ivan Bloch, Franz Rabinowitz, Georg Cohen, Dr. Albert Uhlenberg, and Dr. Magnus Hirschfeld. Ivan Bloch and Magnus Hirschfeld were in reality the real exponents of this so-called scientific sexual research. In reality, it was nothing else than a downright treatise on obscene subjects and a degradation of all marriage and family ties. Isn't this exactly the same sort of crap that they pushed in this nation under the guise of sexual science in the study of human sexuality, the Kinsey Report? They really advance an agenda that wears away traditional morality of society.
Absolutely, and the Kinsey Report was a major part of it, but I don't. He seems to have tried to normalize homosexuality almost.
Mm-hmm.
In males, it seems to me. But I tried to determine his religious background, and it seems to be Protestant.
Mm.
Now the Height Report and Sheer Height, which isn't her real name, she seems to be a Jewess. And I couldn't establish it from my research just this afternoon, but she is teaching right now at Maimonides University in Miami, Florida. And Maimonides was a famous medieval Talmud scholar, and this university is named for him. So you could imagine what kind of university she's teaching at.
I'm sure it's one that's very deserving of the name.
and it's in Miami, so that tells me everything I need to know about Sheer Height. Now, Masters and Johnson actually preceded her. And Masters seems to be from a Christian background, but Johnson is a Jewess. So they definitely had a hand in this, you know, in these early sex reports that were coming out in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. But look at the end result of it is like Dr. Ruth Westheimer. And that other one, that doctor, what's her name? Not Dr. Judy, what? Dr. Laura Schlesinger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're all Jewesses, and they do make a big business out of sex. And I'm sure there are other, should I say, radio personalities in that mold. And the happy hooker was a Jewess, Xavier Hollander. She was a Jewess. And the Hollywood Madam, Heidi Fleiss, is a Jewess. So I mean, there's really an endless stream of of Jewish immorality in the sexual revolution. I mean, we're not even getting into the comedians and Lenny Bruce and Howard Stern, and there's an endless list of immoral Jewish clowns that have made billions of dollars off being sexually corrupt.
There's nothing funny or comedic about blasphemy and ridicule of all traditional social values and high virtue.
But they've made billions of dollars on it. There's no doubt.
Yet people think that it's funny.
People
yet
buy it up.
Well, we have a society today that's basically thoroughly Judaized, and I notice it in what young people find funny these days. You know, I tell a detailed and involved joke where you need some knowledge of history to get the punchline. Somebody else tells some bathroom gutter joke that, you know, it just literally comes straight out of the toilet, and they think it's hilarious.
Absolutely. And all of those, almost all of those sex comedians or those sexually deviant comedians or the personalities that promote sexual deviance are all Jews. Sarah Jessica Parker's a Jew. Al Goldstein, an early and famous pornographer. Drew Magazine, he's a Jew. The seven largest producers of pornography, Christine Hefner is a Jewess. Michael Wiener is a Jew. Burf Milton, they say he's the third largest pornography company, private media group. They say he's a Swede, but Milton's not a Swedish name by any means.
And I'd like to point out, too, that it seems the Jews, under the guise of feminism, lead the charge against pornography. Andrea Dworkin, you remember her?
Mm-hmm.
She's that that dyke Jewess. I believe she's now dead, but she led the charge against pornography, saying that pornography served to facilitate for men raping women.
Yeah, well, her and the other one, that feminist ex-Playboy bunny Jew, her name is just lost on me right now, and it should be on the tip of my tongue. And the big women's lib Jewess, Gloria Steinem, that's it, Gloria Steinem. She's a Jewess, and she's right after the mold of Andrea Dworkin.
Steinem was in Playboy?
She was a Playboy bunny, Gloria Steinem.
Ugh.
I think in Chicago, I'm not positive. Back in the 60s, yeah. Well, anyway, the seven biggest pornography companies, five of them I can identify their CEOs and or founding fathers as Jews. And that's Playboy, New Frontier Media, Private Media, Penthouse, and Vivid Entertainment. And I don't know what Larry Flint is. He was supposedly born to poor people in Kentucky or something like that. I it doesn't seem that he's a Jew, but he missed a good opportunity. And all of these are really pikers compared to the guy that's billed he's an internet pornography king. His name is Seth Warshavsky, and he's billed as the Bill Gates of smut. He's an internet kingpin that started out with a club somewhere in Washington or in the Pacific Northwest.
They've sure made a killing out of pandering to people's unhealthy or otherwise healthy desires that have been turned down degenerate paths. Since, you know, human reproduction is a natural desire, yet the Jew takes it. He panders and caters to it, but then he turns it down a direction that will never result in the production of a viable child. And if it does, he's got a cousin in the abortion industry who will take care of that.
Absolutely. Okay, you want to go on with Weeby?
Yes. Their assistants were Felix Abraham und Levaillans. No amount of search will ever reveal a Christian collaborator in this sexual science, so-called. The publications issued by these obscene pseudoscientists tell their own particular story of what took place in Magnus Hirschfeld's Institution for Sexual Science and in similar concerns. Quote, sexual catastrophes, quote, sexual pathology, quote, love chains, quote, how to avoid pregnancy by Magnus Hirschfeld, quote, the perverters, quote, prostitution, quote, sexual life in our age by Iwan Bloke. These were the popular subjects. It was due to their unrestricted and infamous efforts that the general public became acquainted with all the noisy talk of free love, a call for unlimited right to allow all passions and instincts to run riot, as well as the demand to make homosexuality and abortion non-punishable offenses. A heated campaign was waged on the question of unrestricted and non-punishable acts of abortion, championed by Jews, Dr. Max Hodan, Dr. Lothar Wolff, Dr. Levilenz, Martha Rubenwolf, Felix Hall, and Alphonse Goldschmidt. This circle of Jews issued at the same time numerous publications advocating greater birth restrictions and the avoidance of pregnancy. And now today, their proteges are now saying that since there aren't enough people in Germany, they need to import foreign workers since the Germans didn't have enough children. That's awfully convenient and seems like a coincidence, wouldn't you say?
Well, it all seems to work towards the destruction of our race.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it was only subconscious on the part of most Jews, that's what their aim is. There's no doubt.
They have the blueprint in the form of Satan's genetics instilled in them. They're imbued with it from birth on, so they know exactly what they have to do. Whether or not they're consciously aware of destroy the white race, destroy the white race, they're still undermining everything that our civilization is founded upon.
Absolutely. And when there was a sexual revolution here in the 60s, which they attempted to effect under Weimar in Germany, which Wiebe is writing about, and it's the same exact people doing it here in the 1960s, there's no doubt nobody stood against it.
Hmm.
And the groups that did attempt to stand against it let themselves be marginalized and ridiculed by the mainstream media. Groups like the Moral Majority and Jerry Falwell, and there's rumors that he was actually a Jew. I don't know if they're true or not.
He organized an awful lot of people, and they achieved a whole lot of nothing.
Right, absolutely. He raised a whole lot of funds and achieved a whole lot of nothing, too.
I'm sure he lived pretty large on those funds, though.
Oh, I'm sure. There's no doubt. But when you look at the media that should have been reporting on all of this, the watchdogs of society, well, they're controlled by the same exact people.
Absolutely.
The entire media is controlled by the same exact people. And they promoted it. They promoted it every step of the way.
If people like Falwell had ever offered any hope for meaningful change, he would have been as ridiculed as Hitler. The fact that the Jews cozied up to him and they were fine with his movement, aside from a few times making ostensible nominal attacks against it, saying that, oh, he wants to establish an American theocracy. They would just occasionally make a little jab at him, nothing too serious. That shows that he was essentially in bed with them, if not knowingly and consciously, at least in terms of ultimate outlook.
It's very likely. I'm not going to say it's a definite fact, but it's highly likely. Because he's dependent on the media also. And every media, every major media outlet was controlled by the Jews. All through the sexual revolution, all through the feminist revolution, they created those revolutions. The media created those revolutions. And we bought and paid for them.
I remember.
Because we watched those TV programs. We bought those magazines. We bought those newspapers. We paid for the revolutions that destroyed our society.
So we basically paid for our own cultural destruction.
Yes, we did. We bought their records. We bought their tapes and their movies. We bought those issues of the New York Times and Time magazine.
Interesting you mentioned Time magazine. I remember reading an article, and I think it was the 1960s, Time magazine was accused of anti-Semitism and being an anti-Jewish publication since they were... It was claimed that they painted Israel in a less than positive light. That was the extent necessary to get them labeled anti-Semitic.
Yeah, absolutely. If you don't fawn all over them like the rest of the Christian Zionists, that the you know, Time Magazine, I remember explicitly an article published, it was the early 80s, but it may have been sooner than that, called The Browning of America. And they bragged about how America was going to be a minority white nation by 2050. And it's probably higher than that. It's probably worse than that.
I remember when Clinton gave a speech at some college, he talked about how whites would be a minority in this country, and the mostly white audience gave a standing ovation.
Yeah, that's incredible.
They have to have some serious mental or moral flaw in order for them to do that.
Well, I would have been. That's the disease of liberalism.
I would have been hard pressed to avoid throwing something at him.
Yeah. Well, the important thing to note is that Kurt Wiebe names all these Jews in the sexual revolution in Germany that they attempted early in the 1900s, and 30 or 40 years later it happened here, and there were nobody but Jews behind it, and nobody stood against it.
I'd like to finish up the little blurb here. These two paragraphs are interesting. Finally, we must not overlook Dr. Max Hodan, Berlin's medical officer of health. With his, quote, workers' sexual magazine, he contrived to inject the poison of moral disintegration into the broad masses. He also earned for himself a particularly unsavory reputation for his outspoken propaganda for sexual self-abuse. And the Jews are doing this today with the UN. They're advising that schools set curriculums for 3-year-olds to 5-year-olds, that 5-year-olds in kindergarten be taught about masturbation, and that parents stimulate the sex organs of their 3-year-old children so they can get used to appreciating their bodies. Doesn't that just sound like some sort of...
Well,
it was written by a Talmudic child molester.
When rabbis can justify using their own mouths to suck the blood off of the penises of boys that they circumcise, where do you draw the line? There are no lines.
Well,
there are
draw
no lines. What gets worse than that? What's more perverted than that?
I couldn't think of much.
And giving little babies herpes, which happened in recent history, that there was an outbreak of herpes amongst Jewish boys in New York City, transmitted by rabbis who were sucking the blood from their penises.
They were ushering them into the Jewish cult.
When your religious leaders are that degenerated, there are no lines. And the Jews, being Satan themselves, nothing is out of bounds. And the sad part is that we don't see it. We as a group do not see it. And they could run this article about these rabbis in the New York Times, spread across 2 pages, like it's an everyday occurrence. Like we have to fix this problem. It's just a normal occurrence, and we have to address it. It's sick. It's beyond sick.
It shows that basically that the bedrock of our society has been severely undermined, and it's basically been replaced with quicksand.
No doubt.
Herr Scavenius, the Danish charge d'affaires at The Hague, was undoubtedly right when he, when he declared 3 years ago in a wireless lecture that, quote, Germany at that time was the pornographic center of the world, end quote. And my little side note here is today it's the United States of America.
Right, absolutely. And that's because that's because the Jews basically during the post-war years and the Weimar years had a free hand in Germany, just like they have a free hand today in America.
And we're the laughing stock of the world, aren't we? I mean, people think of America and they think of girls gone wild, some hideous Jewish troll giving a girl a beer or a $10 bill and she lifts her top up. Or sometimes it's not even that, just point the camera at him and say, do this. And the next thing you know, there's some girl flashing the camera. And I've actually seen ads for this disgusting movie on regularly scheduled TV programs. My dad will be watching some Star Trek recording from 1 in the morning, and I'll be sitting in a chair next to him, and I'll look over, and all of a sudden they'll scroll an ad for Girls Gone Wild, and it's on regular, supposedly family TV.
That's incredible. I don't know. I don't watch TV. I realized, you know, I haven't really watched TV in, I don't know, 15 years, 20 years. I don't know. I forget. It's been so long. But a couple of years back, I had walked past the TV, and I saw this advertisement for this male sexual enhancer or whatever you want to, one of these pills, Viagra or something like that. I couldn't, and it was prime time. And it was like 7, 8 o'clock at night. And I couldn't believe they had that garbage on commercials at that time of night, that society had already degenerated to that point. That every 12 and 13-year-old and 11-year-old watching television at that time should be subject to these advertisements about male sexual enhancement.
Well, if the Jew could get away with it, they'd be showing hardcore porn at 3 p.m.,
I'm sure they would. They do. They, I mean, they come close. That's what time that kike Jerry Springer is on, and Maury and all those clowns.
Mm-hmm.
And isn't like the theme to Maury every day usually young white girls that have six black lovers and one of them's the father of their little niglet?
And they have to figure out which one.
Yeah. Isn't that the theme to Maury most days? It seemed to be, what, you know, the few episodes that I observed, that was the usual theme.
May I interject something here?
Yeah,
sure.
I was at Walmart about 2 weeks ago, and I bought several movies of old horror movies. Some of them had 12, 15 movies on each disc. I've been watching some of them, and they go back to the late 50s, throughout the 60s and into the 70s. And I am ultimately amazed at the Jewish propaganda, the filth, the sex, and that's in these movies that I never saw and recognized before. They've been doing this for a long time. And you know, the television today is horrible. As a matter of fact, I had mine cut off. But it's amazing what these people are doing. And the average Jacob Israel is completely unaware of what he's been being bombarded with.
It's incredible.
Well, the average person's been duped, and they have no idea that they're basically being lied to right in front of their face. They're being overtly swindled, yet they can't see it.
They simply do not have the eyes to see and the ears to hear. And, of course, we know what the penalty is going to be for that. And I'm thankful that we, as a group and as a family, and all the people in the chat room, I think, fit into that category. You know, we are part of what I consider the wise virgins. We have the oil in our lamps, and thanks to all of you people, we're getting more and more. But it's not hard to understand how 2/3 of Jacob Israel is going to not make the grade and suffer through all of this.
Well, they're partying with the devil. They deserve the judgment of Yahweh. There's no doubt.
All right.
That's just the way it is. I mean, half of my own children are 2/3 of my. Actually, I could say probably 5/6. Of my own children are all tied up in it and enjoying it and totally unaware and reject any attempt to be corrected. So there's no you know, they deserve it. That's the way it is.
Well, it's so disheartening. I have no one in my family that understands the truth, and all of my neighbors, I have wonderful Jacob Israel neighbors with sweet little kids, and none of them understand, and it breaks my heart.
Yeah, well, that's the way it is. I can't, it is heartbreaking. I try not to think about it. Okay, you want to move on to the Jewish share in crying?
All right, I wanted to read out of the riddle of the Jews' success first.
Okay, be my guest.
It has already been intimated above that the personality of the Jew exercises a remarkable, even puzzling influence over many women, which can be described as suggestive and will-destroying. When during the past 90s, this subject was for once in a way treated to the public discussion in the periodical Deutsche Dissoziation Blatten, Personal Experiences and Observations, confirming this influence poured in from all sides. Powers are seen to be at work in the background, which one is tempted to call demonical. And there is an unnatural sensual stimulation, which apparently robs the victim of her reason. The role of enchanter, which one otherwise assigns to the female, seems in this case, to, by some inexplicable means, to be transferred to the opposite sex. And this power must be described as unnatural and disquieting, because the woman, who is accessible to its influence, appears to succumb literally without showing the slightest traces of resistance. Amongst the communications already mentioned are the following, which have been selected as particularly characteristic. A lady describes what was actually observed on several occasions. A somewhat shabby-looking Jew met a respectable middle-class woman. He glances at her. She stops, remains standing as if rooted to the spot, looks round after him, and finally follows him. Much the same thing happened in another street, where a red-haired Jewish clothes dealer was standing at the door of his shop. A respectable young female, in fact scarcely more than a schoolgirl, passes by, and the Jew catches her eye or whispers something to her. She stops suddenly as if shot and remains before the next shop window, her gaze fixed on the Jew. It is not long before she follows him into his shop. An old and ugly Jew called, ostensibly on business, at the house of a young widow of a merchant who had but recently died. She admitted him again the same evening and allowed him to spend the night with her. She came from a good family and was educated and refined. He was a repulsive old fellow, devoid of refinement. The lady continues, the question arises, are perhaps secret Talmudic arts at the bottom of all this? It is said that many Jews have brought their art to such a pitch that they can with one glance cause a female to quiver and tremble just as if she had received an electric shock. A lady who had allowed herself to be implicated with a Jew gave the following account to her family as soon as she had regained her senses. The first time when the man spoke to her and gazed at her with his penetrating dark eyes, she felt stricken to the core, and from that hour she had been drawn, as if by an irresistible force, to him, that he had appeared to her in dreams and such. And then continuing along, she mentions, or I should say not she, the woman's no longer quoted, this is F. Roderick Stoltheim, the author now. The nature of woman is adaptable. It acquiesces involuntarily and unconsciously in the actual feeling and way of thinking of the man with whom she comes into immediate contact and for whom she feels sympathy. In proximity to a noble-natured man, a woman will also preserve and uphold all her innate dignity and distinction, but brought into close contact with a low voluptuary, she is just as much in danger of sinking to his level. Now, the Jew has a peculiar knack of speaking of sexual matters as if these were perfectly harmless and ordinary topics of conversation. And in this way, he contrives to lull or even deaden a woman's natural sense of shame. In the vicinity of the Jew, feminine sensibility sinks to the lowest plane. One may even go so far as to say that each Jew transforms the women around him into prostitutes. It seems like the author of this text here has some knowledge of Scripture. He talks about the Jewish enchanters, and I'm just getting images of Nakash in my mind.
Yeah, what else could it be? I mean, I think they give themselves too much credit, but what else could it be?
Mm. All right, would you like to start the Jewish Share and Crime, or would you like to discuss that little quote from Stoltheim a bit more?
No, we can move on to Jewish Share and Crime.
Okay.
It is difficult to ascertain the real extent of the German Jewish Share and Crime throughout the Reich for the following reasons. The criminal records kept in Germany since 1882 recognized only Orthodox Jews.
Mm.
And that's the same in America. For the most part, those innumerable Jews who had accepted a Christian faith, or who were not associated with any established religion, that's more like it, were never embraced in these records. Therefore, a great number of criminals, Jewish by race, has been absorbed in other statistical categories, like white. To this must be added the fact that commencing with the year 1918, criminal records ceased to show any subdivision into confessions or religions. This step was in all probability the result of Jewish intervention. The following statistics, therefore, cannot in any way be regarded as complete. Nevertheless, they are food for thought in throwing light on Jewish characteristics. When taking all this into account, the official statistics of the German Reich reveal that the fact that a number of certain crimes were committed more frequently by Jews than Christians. Taking an average valuation for the period 1892 to 1901, we obtain the following table. Fraud and trickery. Jewish percentage compared with Christian criminals, 14 times greater. Usury, 13 times greater. Well, you could have guessed that. Copyright infringement, 11 times greater. Fraudulent bankruptcy, 9 times greater. Fraudulent insolvency, 6 times greater. And receiving stolen property, 5 times greater.
I'd like to deal more real quick with this copyright infringement. I remember in college we were in a business class and we were watching some video, a lecture, and there was an American company, I think it was Rubbermaid. They were making basically just Tupperware, and they were talking about corporate problems they have, and they said that one of their major problems is that Israeli firms steal their patents and then produce their products under cost, since they have no design costs, no research costs, nothing like that sunk into the product, so they can undercut them. And they said that they're constantly trying to sue these Israeli firms, but Israel won't help them at all. And I remember my dad saying things like, you know, in the business world, one of the greatest problems is copyright fraud, patent theft, and that the Israelis are at the forefront of it, along with the Chinese.
Why wouldn't they be? Well, the Chinese have no respect at all for material property, for property, for intellectual property rights. They have no respect at all for it. That they will buy one copy of a software program and turn around and copy it 3 million times and sell it for a buck a piece. They don't care. And they would do the same thing with just about anything. And it's a lie that we could sell the Chinese software. I mean, that's part of the globalist lie, because we can't sell them any software. You'll sell them a couple of copies of something, and that's all they'll ever need.
We shouldn't be selling them anything.
No, absolutely not. We shouldn't be giving them anything, selling them anything. I'd like to talk about Jewish crime in America. Actually, during these same years, in the 20s and 30s, I mean, we hear a lot about Meyer Lansky, but Jewish gangsters were a lot more prevalent than just Meyer Lansky. Murder Incorporated was almost exclusively Jewish, and it was also known as the Syndicate. And they're portrayed on TV as being Italian or American-looking anyway, and they're all Jews. That they alone killed over 1,000 people across the nation in their organized racketeering. Meyer Lansky, Bugsy Siegel, Longy Zwillman, Mo Dalitz.
I'm reading about, this was even on your Wikipedia. It says that it was founded by Benjamin, Bugsy Siegel, Meyer Lansky, and some of the top heads of this killing committee were Martin Goldstein, Abe Reles, Burkhalter, Yo Adonis, Albert Anastasia. He was called Lord High Executioner, and then Lepke, somebody then named Jacob Gura Shapiro. Those all sound like Italians, maybe French or Irishmen. It's really hard to tell.
Yeah, right. Yeah, they were all Jews. It's incredible, the number of Jews in organized crime. And it's incredible how we associate it with Italians, because they were almost all Jews. I mean, a great number of them were. That the Italians were just secondary. That they were pikers compared to these guys.
They were just the fall guys, weren't they?
Yeah, it seems to be. This is from I.L. Peretz, Jewish Community School. in central New Jersey, the secular alternative. It's incredible. It's actually a confession, more or less, that they weren't good Jews, they weren't good people, they weren't even good thinkers. Yet fascination lives on with these almost fictional characters. They were Jewish gangsters. They grew up going to synagogue and celebrating holidays and Sabbath. But as they got older, they were anything but Orthodox. Jewish gangsters didn't think of God, I don't think Jews do, ethics, being a good Jew, or even consider Tikkun Olam or Zakat Zedaka, I don't know, some Jew word. That they were thugs, hoodlums, crude criminals, and anything synonymous with these traits. Yet Jewish gangsters of America innovated organized crime. They made it as we know it today. These people made it organized. If you watch the Godfather series or Goodfellas or Bugsy, the crime you see is what the Jews made it. They were the masterminds of the mob. Jewish gangsters were descendants of immigrants trying to make a living. The American dream. Yeah, right. Other immigrants also started the life of crime. In fact, any nationality you could think of had gangsters. There were gangs for them. They were all either immigrants or second-generation Americans. You have to look at the irony of the situation. The immigrants wanted their children to lead a successful, law-abiding life and live the American dream. Now the irony was, in the time of the Depression and Prohibition, when organized crime flourished, you couldn't be both successful and law-abiding in most cases. The only real successful people were the gangsters. And they basically admit that the Jews created organized crime.
Well, I'd like to talk about two particularly noteworthy criminals who have been called Poles and Italians. Richard the Iceman Kuklinski. Have you heard of this character?
Yeah, I have actually heard of him.
He was born in Jersey City, New Jersey.
Yeah, and that's the city I grew up in.
He killed upwards of 200 people during his career as a contract killer. As a child, they said that he would torture animals to death for fun. He committed his first murder at age 14. And when he was 16 to 20 or so, he got in with some of his friends and he began pirating pornographic tapes. Then he moved on to contract killing, during which time I said he killed about 200 people. And sometimes he would kill them by feeding them to rats. He would just leave them alive and let the rats eat them. And they identified him as a Polish-American on Wikipedia.
And he was a Jew.
And his younger brother, Joseph Kuklinski, was a rapist and a murderer who raped and murdered a 12-year-old girl. He's been listed as a Polish and an Irish-American.
That's the way they do it. That's like Sheer Height is listed as a German-American and renounced her American citizenship and got renewed German citizenship. But I'm sure she was a Jew. I just can't find it.
And they said that these people worked for, quote, Italian-American crime families.
Yeah, well, they want to depict them as anything but Jews. But, I mean, in some places, like this Jew school I found in New Jersey, you find amazing confessions.
Well, just like Wiebe mentions about how you will never find a Christian co-conspirator or collaborator in the Jewish pornography trade, I imagine the amount of genuine Italians in the mafia would be sufficient to maybe fill up one Cadillac, if that.
Yeah, they're all crypto-Jews or Sicilians.
Mm.
With, you know, mostly Arabs.
And that's
Arabs
why they get
or Jewish Murano Sicilians.
And that's why they get along well with the Albanians, the Turks, and they, you know, it's just one big, happy, global Asiatic crime family.
Basically, that's what it boils down to.
And they're now working with the Chinese, the Triads, the Japanese Yakuza.
And the Russian mob is primarily Jewish.
Mm-hmm. Well, about the Russian mob, I've said before that you could find enough Russians in there to fill a phone booth. That almost all of them, you know, if you had a who's who of the so-called Russian mob, it would read like an invitation list for a bar mitzvah.
Absolutely. All right,
and yet,
continue with the next paragraph of Wiebe.
All right.
It will be seen from this that Jews have a strong liking for commercial crime, that this fact has in no way been sufficiently explained by a large percentage of Jews in business is revealed by the investigations conducted by the Jew Rupin in his book, Die Juden der Gegenwart, Contemporary Jews, Berlin, 1904. With the aid of comparative statistics, Rubin arrives at considerably greater figures for commercial crime than Jewish participation in commerce would seem to indicate. Now, as an aside, it's very notable that Wiebe, in his expose on the Jews, has used Jewish books and writers to expose the Jews as often as he could. Have you noticed that as we proceeded through the series?
Almost everything he uses, it comes from a Jewish source.
And he can't possibly be labeled an anti-Semite or some right-wing nutjob. That's my point in elucidating this.
Well, they would call themselves hating Jews, wouldn't they?
Well, yeah, they would. Today they would. I don't think they even knew that term. You know, they even thought of that angle back then. The Jew Wasserman arrives at the same conclusion in his book, Baruch Confession und Verbrechen, or Profession, Confession, and Crime, Munich, 1907. He proves that Jewish criminality in bankruptcy in 1900 was 7 times greater than among non-Jewish criminals and 6 times greater in cases of fraudulent insolvency. Wasserman obtained these statistics by being guided expressly by the percentage participation in commercial professions. The official statistics of the German Reich for the period 1910 to 1914 furthermore prove that at a later stage, very little alteration had taken place. The following table exemplifies this. Crime. Professional receivers of stolen property. Jewish percentage compared with Christian criminals, 5 times greater. Commercial fraud, 3 times greater. Fraud, 2 times greater. Copyright infringement, 8 times greater. Usury, 12 times greater. And fraudulent bankruptcy, 13 times greater. You have a comment?
He's not even getting into violent crime.
No, not at all. He's just getting into commercial crime.
And these are, we should remind the audience that, again, these are only people who were identified as Orthodox Jews, correct?
Right. I'm sure if all Jews were, if all Jews could be identified in these crime statistics, we'd probably just add a zero onto each of those numbers.
It doesn't count the so-called atheist Jew or the lapsed Jew or the converted Jew.
Which is most of all Jews. No doubt. It's the great bulk of Jews.
Most Jews don't bother making any pretense about the synagogue or the Talmud, do they?
Right. Most Jews have no religion at all. The Death of Faith, a book, The Death of Faith, which was actually a tome that misled many many unstable Christians or unlearned Christians, was actually written by a Jew named Sam Harris. I mean, the Jewish mind, God is dead when Nietzsche said so. Or maybe before that.
Was Nietzsche a Jew?
You know, I argue with that. I could talk about Nietzsche. I addressed him in William Fink versus the Paul Bashers, because the Paul Bashers used Nietzsche.
Why would they?
And he wasn't... Yeah, you know, he was supposed to be a classics professor, but a lot of his statements showed to me that he was ignorant of the classics. And that has all the hallmarks of a Jew. His fate besuited him. His fate suited him well. He ended up in an insane asylum by age 44 or something like that. And he deserved to be there.
All right.
Would you like to continue with Wiebe?
All right. Quite apart from these commercial crimes, Jews have taken a still greater share in other branches of crime, far more reprehensible. We refer to the drug traffic and prostitution, illicit gambling, and pickpocketing. The Central Organization for Combating Drug Crime has established that in 1931, out of 272 international drug traffickers, no less than 69, that's 25%, were Jews. In 1932, the figures were 294 and 73, again 25%. In 1933, the Jewish percentage had increased to 30%. And I'd like to take the time here as an aside to point out that the so-called Colombian drug cartels and the Mexican drug cartels are basically Sephardic Jews that immigrated into those countries hundreds of years ago, or in some cases Ashkenazi Jews that immigrated in the last 100 years, and they've just established themselves in organized crime under the guise of being a Colombian or being a Mexican. I think that's worth noting.
Even today, if you go to Google and just type in Israeli drug ring, you'll find an Israeli drug ring tied in with Hezbollah. You'll find an Israeli spy ring tied in with drugs, and an Israeli drug ring in Panama City, an Israeli drug ring in Colombia, an Israeli drug ring in Canada. Yeah, you'll find references to Israeli drug rings all over the place.
Anywhere you find Jews, you'll find an Israeli drug ring.
Basically, it seems that way.
And it's very interesting that some of the Colombian militias and drug cartel organizations have Israeli weapons. And they've been known to receive financing from Israel. That seems quite coincidental, wouldn't you say? That's just a coincidence.
I'm looking at an article right now, the Internet Jerusalem Post. Jerusalem, Friday, September 17th, 2004. Los Angeles police uncover Israeli drug ring. They're everywhere. Israeli drug rings are everywhere. Related stories, our dossier on the Mossad, Israeli's intelligence service.
Well,
they tie them to the drug ring.
There's a leader from Colombia called Carlos Castano. He was the founder and president of the United Self-Defense Forces of Colombia, the AUC. It was considered an extreme right-wing paramilitary organization. They went around killing leftists and making peasants pay them protection money. So it was basically just a band of thugs. Most of their financing, about 90%, came through cocaine trafficking or coca cultivation. And this leader was indicted in Colombia, Carlos Castano, and then he just vanished. And now they list him as dead, although no one can really say for sure. And the Colombian government suspected that he was in Israel, but they had no confirmation on that. But that was the story, that for years he had just been spirited away to Israel. Now, why would a Colombian, if he's a Catholic Spaniard or even a mulatto or anything, why would he go to Israel? That's an interesting question, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely.
Right.
That's Israel is just what Adolf Hitler said it would be, a haven for criminals, and a haven and a high school for criminals, because he said that criminals would flee there and they would train their fellow Jews how to be how to be criminals too.
Should I go ahead and read that out of Mein Kampf?
Yeah, if you could find it quick.
Page 184, when the Zionists try to make the rest of the world believe that the new national consciousness of the Jews will be satisfied by the establishment of a Jewish state in Palestine, the Jews thereby adopt another means to dupe the simple-minded Gentile. They have not the slightest intention of building up a Jewish state in Palestine so as to live in it. What they are really aiming at is to establish a central organization for their international swindling and cheating. As a sovereign state, this cannot be controlled by any of the other states. Therefore, it can serve as a refuge for swindlers who have been found out, and at the same time, a high school for the training of other swindlers. Continuing along with Wiebe, the Central Organization for Combating Unlawful Gambling and Games of Chance registered 57 Jews out of a total of 94 cases which came to its notice in 1933. In 411 cases of pickpocketing in 1932, 193 Jews were involved. In the same year, it was found out that among the international pickpocketing gangs, out of a total of 163 criminals, 134 were Jews. That is to say, 82%.
It's no different today. It's just hard to catch them. They're very sophisticated, and they're very successful at bribing government officials because they have them so infiltrated from the inside.
The high percentage of Jews in immoral crime, already referred to in the chapter on Jewish immorality, is frankly admitted by the Jewish scientist Rupin, to whom we have already referred. He writes that Jews live principally in the large towns and cities is responsible for the fact that certain crimes usually limited to city life are associated with them. For example, procuration, cooperation, and immorality. In view of the limited space at our disposal, we could necessarily only give a resume of the part played by the Jews in Germany before 1933. It would be easy to write a substantial volume on the subject, but even such a work could only reach the same conclusions at practically every page. Our resume will suffice to convince unprejudiced and objectively minded readers of that which it was our object to prove, namely, that the preponderating influence of the Jews developed into a national calamity of the worst sort for Germany, and that the previously cited words of Theodor Herzl, "Every misfortune increases their power," have proved in the result to be only too true. Shall we continue on?
Yeah, let's continue on, will we be?
All right. The interdependence of national distress and Jewish ascendancy has scarcely ever been manifested with such luminous clearness as in Germany. Under these circumstances, it surely behooves us to seek to understand the fundamental reasons underlying the Jewish problem in this country as it has presented itself during the past decades. And we could just chop out the word Germany and put the United States of America, couldn't we?
Absolutely.
It seems that as the United States has declined, the Jews have ascended, and now they're sitting above us.
That's what we're told, that Esau would become the head and we'd become the tail, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Right out of Deuteronomy 28.
It's a perfect demonstration of the fulfillment of Scripture.
They are high above us right now. They have all the seats of power in this country.
And that was the last paragraph in Weeby you just read.
Yes. Is that you typing there?
No, Gerald.
Oh, you. I'm going to mute that then. All right.
The advantage the Jews have is that the media, being controlled by the Jews, they just don't reveal quite often when so-called white criminals are Jews. I mean, like the Columbine school shootings. Eric Harris and that Klebold kid were both Jews.
Mm-hmm.
But we were never told that by the media. They were portrayed as white supremacists.
Yes, and in fact, they made several quotes that they hated racists, they hated Nazis, and they wanted to kill as many white Christians as they could. When they shot up the library at Columbine, they allowed their Jewish friends to leave, and they attacked people who were members of a Christian organization that was active in the high school. They basically singled out white Christian females.
Yes, and this is what we get when we allow 96% of the media to be controlled by six Jewish companies.
And how many people actually know that Klebold and Harris were planning to hijack an aircraft and demand that they be flown to Israel? And if they couldn't get there, they were going to crash it into a skyscraper somewhere either in the Midwest or the East Coast.
And, you know, I've heard it on YouTube after YouTube video. I've heard it on many YouTube videos. Jews using the slur Nazi synonymously with the word Christian. They equate Christians with Nazis.
Well,
in the Jewish mind, the two are the same.
Well, what two groups of people, spiritually / ideologically, have opposed the Jews the most in their history? Christians and National Socialists.
Well, right, but today, I mean, most Christians are just enamored and totally taken in by God's chosen people. That they do anything. They'd fall over themselves to marry a Jew or to be a Jew.
And they'd jump on a grenade if it would save a Jew.
It seems to be most Southern Baptists, at least, would surely do that.
They certainly wouldn't hesitate to throw one of America's soldiers on top of the grenade.
Of course not. It's incredible.
And in the way of so-called Nazis, most so-called Nazis these days are doing the Jews a great favor by vigorously attacking Christianity.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. They don't realize it, but the whole white nationalist crowd. Yeah, you know, paganism in Europe had absolutely no defense against the Jews.
And I've seen a thread on Stormfront. I think somebody there has been paying attention to our Hitler and Christianity series, and they've come up with their own answer, Hitler and Islam. And they're talking about how the SS recruited Muslims from the Balkans, and how Hitler was given a sigmatar by the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, and how Hitler had a great affinity for the Quran and for Islam. And that, to me, just sounds like so much bunk.
It's absolute bunk.
And then they tried to say that Islam was a warrior religion that would save the West if we embraced it.
Islam, well, what about the 800-year history we have of Islam trying to destroy the West?
They didn't address that conveniently. Nor did they address the fact that the Muslims have been bought off in Egypt, Jordan, Saudi Arabia. So even if every white person converted to Islam, they'd still be, they'd be butt-kissing Muslims. You know what I mean? They would be kissing the Jewish butt, but they'd be identifying as a Muslim. They might, you know, they might as well just stay a Christian right now.
As far as I'm concerned, Stormfront is compromised, and Don Black is a Jew butt wipe.
Mm-hmm.
And all his little white, small-minded white nationalist followers are absolutely useless pawns. The whole bunch of them could go straight to hell.
And they probably,
probably will.
All right. I'll continue on with Weeby. Is that all right?
Right. I thought we had read the last paragraph of Weeby. I must be seeing.
Oh, no. I have about 5 more pages left.
Okay.
Animated by a desire to solve this ancient problem, if possible, by the emancipation and assimilation of Jewish elements, Germany had shown herself more accessible to the absorption of Jews than many other countries had done. All barriers had been taken down, all restrictions abolished, all spheres of activity opened unreservedly to the Jews. Nay, leading positions were assigned to them, even in those domains which were of the most vital importance for national life. The Jews, who numbered less than 1% of the total population of Germany, occupied the key posts in German industry. Political leadership was to a large extent in their hands. The press and cultural life in general were predominantly under their influence. Their aggregate income exceeded that of the 99% remaining inhabitants by over one-third. Truly, the Jews had every conceivable opportunity for merging their distinctive existence in the collective life of the German community, a distinctiveness, moreover, frequently deplored by some of the best Jewish elements. But the Jews consistently ignored the rules of fair play as far as their credulous German partner was concerned. The overwhelming majority of them never desired to be merged in the German nation because they were aware of the fact that their racial dissimilarity constituted an insuperable obstacle to assimilation. During the years of great tribulation, they never hesitated to betray Germany and to shamelessly misuse the opportunities afforded them in such abundance for their own egotistical purposes and interests. Defeatism and treason, political degradation and economic corruption, moral depravity, the debasement of all national and religious values, these were the outstanding features of a Germany dominated by the alien Jewish race. This sounds like it's coming right out of America in the 50s, 60s, and 70s.
Well, it may as well be. There's no, the debasement of all national and religious values. Just listen to Lenny Bruce. Listen to Howard Stern.
Mm.
Well, listen to the pap that came out of the so-called 60s revolutionaries like Rubin and Abby Hoffman.
Filth served up as gospel.
Yes. That's all they've ever done. And the Jewish media has given them the airtime. And the American people have bought it. And they still buy it.
But no one made us buy it.
No, nobody made us buy it. Nobody makes you go down to the corner store and buy a copy of Rolling Stone. Nobody makes you buy a copy of Newsweek magazine.
We've basically put into the hands of the criminals the guns with which they are mowing us down.
Absolutely. The New York Post, the Daily News, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, every major New York City newspaper is controlled by Jews.
Germany had to pay dearly for the illusion that it is possible to solve the Jewish question by means of a generous effort to assimilate the Jews. She had reckoned without a factor of decisive importance, namely the congenital, ingrained, boundless ingratitude of the Jewish race. Not the least of the reasons for the uncompromising attitude of German anti-Semitism, an attitude that has often been misunderstood abroad, is the glaring contrast, irrefutably evidenced by the events of the past decades, between the incontestable good faith of the Germans and the cynical ingratitude of the Jews. Aren't the Jews essentially, all Jewish comedians, it seems that they are known for cynical ingratitude. They ridicule everything about the nation that makes their career possible. If people weren't watching their stupid show, they'd have to have an honest job.
Well, absolutely. And people watch it all the time. How many kids run home from school and turn on Jerry Springer? How many mothers, how many non-working mothers sit at home and turn on Jerry Springer?
Why would anyone want to plop themselves down in front of a box that insults them and ridicules everything that their ancestors fought and died for?
Because they think it's funny.
I think their head's been filled with a sewer hose, and they can't tell what's blasphemous and what's not. That their moral compass is broken.
Yeah, they're about as bad off as Arlene Johnson. They think it's funny.
It's so as if they're...
Right, and if it's not Jerry Springer, it's Oprah, which is even worse. Or Donahue, which is just as bad.
It's as though their conscience had been seared by a hot iron.
It's straight garbage. The Jews produce straight garbage. I mean, and we think it's funny and we buy it. It started with the Marx Brothers and the Three Stooges and all that trash. And it just never ended.
The Jews basically have PhDs in how to pander and cater, don't they?
Well, they are history's panderers.
Well, their father's the great panderer, isn't he?
That's the part of the curse of Cain. It said that unto you shall be his desire, meaning Abel's desire. And that is fulfilled in the children of Seth today. Desiring the fruits of Cain. There's no doubt. It's biblical prophecy fulfilled. It was meant to happen. But that doesn't mean that we have to like it. We have to distinguish the evil. That's our challenge. That's the Christian challenge. To distinguish the evil and to reject it. And, of course, most Christians have failed to do that. Wide is the path to destruction.
It's easy to follow that road.
Yeah, it is. It actually is. And most of us were on it at one time.
All right. That this contrast constitutes, so to speak, the nucleus of the whole Jewish problem has been publicly admitted by two leading Jews. The chief rabbi of Hamburg, Dr. Josef Karlbach, wrote in the Jewish Review Der Morgen, Volume 2, page 129, 1930, quote, "To be a Jew is to be opposed to the natural attitude of human beings." The French Jew, Bernard Lazare, who was well known at the close of the last century, was even more candid in his book, L'Antisemitisme, in which he puts the question, "By what qualities or defects has the Jew drawn upon himself such universal reprobation? Why has he alternately and in equal measure been maltreated and hated by Egyptians and Romans, by Persians and Arabs, by Turks and Christian nations? It is because the Jew is everywhere, and right down to the present day has remained an asocial being." So people who think that antisemitism is something new, that it's unique, or that it came from National Socialist Germany, they haven't studied history. Every nation that has had a Jewish population has either expelled them or been destroyed.
Well, Paul's talking about the Christians and the sufferings brought upon them by the Judeans, those who killed both Prince Joshua and the prophets and banished us and are not pleasing to Yahweh and are contrary to all men.
And the chief rabbi of Hamburg, we've just quoted him as saying that to be a Jew is to be opposed to the natural attitude of human beings.
So they're admitting who they are. They're admitting their nature.
And the Jews are, they basically are at war with the entire world, aren't they?
Well, they're definitely at war with the entire creation of Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're at war with. It's their fathers who rebelled. And they are still carrying on that rebellion. And their end goal is to corrupt the entire creation of Yahweh, the pinnacle of which is the Aryan race.
Yes. If the Jew could, he would wipe the Aryan race from the face of the earth today, and that he would enslave all the other dark races, wouldn't he?
Absolutely. And he'd be able to manipulate and control them, and they're all naturally immoral. And that would be... the Pax Judaica, that would be Jewish heaven. That would be the Jewish Messiah the deliverance of the Jewish Messiah.
Since they were expecting, they're expecting some sort of Messiah that's going to give them control of the world. In short, they're waiting for some Jew to rise up from the ranks of Jewry who's going to be able to bring everything together, millennia of plans, bring it all together, and deliver them the world. Isn't that what they're waiting for?
Right, and as long as there's one pure white man on the planet, they're not safe. And they know that.
That's why every single white country is under attack right now. Can you name a single white country or previously white country that had a homogeneous white population, a good Christian tradition, and strong national values and virtues that is not under attack today with mass immigration of dark races?
Well, of course, they all are now. Even Sweden and Norway and Ireland and Iceland.
Sweden's 10% black.
Yeah, now it is.
There are 1 million Somalian Kafirs, Muslims at that, living in Sweden.
Right. Now, who would do that? Who would do that to Sweden? And why do Swedish men put up with that?
They've been anesthetized.
Yeah, they have, with sex and drugs and alcohol. And ABBA, probably.
They're more concerned about who they're going to hook up with than how much beer they're going to drink, than the fact that thousands of their countrywomen, their cousins, their sisters, their wives, their daughters are being raped on a daily basis in cities that were once probably amongst the safest in the world.
Well, that's it, because those Sudanese Negroes, that they have absolutely no respect for Western society, for white people. And actually, they have a blatant disrespect for it. When they see a white woman that's not wearing a burqa, that they figure that she's fair game. They could rape her. She's a whore, they could rape her.
I've read some interviews online of Somali rapists and Muslims living in Europe, particularly Sweden, and they've said some things that I won't repeat on this program since women are listening. But just to give a rough paraphrase, one of them said that Swedish girls are all whores and that they've all been screwed to pieces and that they've all had their brains screwed out, so it doesn't matter if they jump them and rape them since they've had it before and they'll have it again, and that when it comes time to get married, they'll go marry a virtuous Somalian girl.
Wonderful.
So that's their attitude. They look at our European sisters as just lust mate.
Well, you know, that's didn't Tiger Woods, didn't that nigger marry a Swedish girl?
I have no idea. I don't follow what those people do.
I think I heard that.
And sometimes I hear about things like that, but I could really care less what's going on with the lifestyles of the rich.
Right, I understand that, but some news you just can't help but pick up on.
I know.
The book of Jeremiah says that the day is coming when I will sow the house of Israel and the house of Judah with the seed of man and the seed of beast, and all those who eat the sour grapes shall die. And to me, that means that the sour grapes are the grapes of Sodom from Deuteronomy and the vine of Gomorrah. And that is race mixing and homosexuality. So all of those who eat the sour grapes or who accept race mixing and homosexuality or any sort of fornication, sexual deviancy, shall die. And that's the test that Christendom is undergoing.
The wages of sin is death. Shall I continue on with Wiebe and finish up?
Yes.
These admissions by candid Jewish writers, whose authority is undisputed, explain better than any words of ours why National Socialism was compelled to give a definite and final solution to the Jewish question, so far as Germany is concerned. Anti-Semitic feeling in this country has not been roused to such a degree by the mere fact of the preponderance of an utterly alien influence, but by the spirit underlying that influence and inseparable from it, a spirit of an essentially asocial nature which requited evil for good and invariably prompted those inspired by it to repay hospitality and benevolence with treachery and unrelenting destructive hatred. When the National Socialists came to power in 1933, they endeavored to solve the Jewish question by methods calculated to peacefully reduce the excessive influence of the Jews on public life to proportions compatible, firstly, with the position of the Jews as an alien race, and secondly, with their number, which, as has already been said, was less than 1% of the total German population. When the amount of misfortune brought on Germany by the Jews prior to 1933 is recalled, The methods adopted to diminish their influence on German public life must be accounted remarkably moderate and as evidencing extraordinary restraint and discipline among the leaders of the new Germany. The fact is too easily overlooked that the advent to power of National Socialism constituted a revolution in the truest sense of the word, and it may without exaggeration be asserted that scarcely a revolution in history has been accomplished with such exemplary discipline. The Nuremberg Laws of 1935 formed the basis of a peaceful and orderly settlement of the Jewish question in Germany. But the Jews themselves were not prepared to reckon with the incontestable fact that their era of emancipation in Germany was definitely at an end. They were not willing to abandon their usurped supremacy without a struggle. And since this was no longer possible in Germany itself, they deliberately stirred up an agitation abroad, hardly less dangerous than an openly proclaimed war. And as an aside here, I'd like to point out Daily Express, March 24, 1933, a published paper in Britain. Headline, Judea declares war on Germany. So as early as 1933, within several weeks of Hitler becoming chancellor, the Jews declared war on Germany. I think people should bear that in mind when they consider how events unfolded in the next 10 years. By means of a consistently carried out poisoning of the sources of public opinion, they have succeeded in creating a caricature of National Socialist Germany and inflaming international opinion against the latter. By organizing a boycott of German goods, they have endeavored to throttle Germany economically. They have even gone so far as to reply to the measures of the National Socialist government by the assassination of Wilhelm Gustloff and Ernst von Rath. Yet they claim victim status. I think people should note this. There's an old Polish proverb, the Jew cries in pain as he strikes you.
Absolutely.
The world embracing... you wanted to say something, sir?
No, that's exactly what they did in Germany.
The world embracing associations and interests of Jewry as an international power, as well as the asocial spirit animating it, could not be evidenced in more convincing manner than by its success in putting the whole world, instantaneously, so to speak, into movement against National Socialist Germany. For the world has taken very much less notice of processes of elimination carried out elsewhere on a far greater scale. Who has championed the cause of those millions of Russians driven from their land by the Bolshevik Revolution, or who, unable to escape in time, were tortured and massacred? Who ever spent a thought on the Germans in the Baltic states, 80% of whom were forced to emigrate after the Great War, and who, to a large extent, are condemned to a life of perpetual hardship in foreign countries? And I'd like to point out, too, I was speaking with my father, and I said that if the American people should succeed in shrugging off the shackles of Jewish oppression in this country, they would, without a moment's hesitation, bring the Red Chinese down upon us to destroy our nation with the same vigor with which they pursued the destruction of National Socialist Germany. And we can see this evidenced by the fact that the Jews have spent the last 30 to 40 years building up Red China for the purpose of its serving as its enforcer on the world scale.
Absolutely. And they had already looted and pillaged everything they thought they could get from the Soviets, from Russia. So they let that fall apart and they went after China.
They needed a new enforcer.
I believe so. And we would have, I sincerely believe that if we didn't cave in to the Cultural Revolutions of the 60s and 70s and roll over like a bunch of soft-ass faggots, and accept all that, that we would have probably had a war with the Soviet Union. They would have brought the Soviet Union against us. But they beat us in the Cultural Revolution, so they didn't have to. They Judaized America without a whimper.
On the other hand, wherever the interests of a single Jew are affected, international Jewry howls for redress and assistance until international peace is seriously menaced by its bellowings. Germany knows full well where the source of the everlasting disquiet is to be found, which perpetually enervates the world and effectively prevents the realization of all efforts to reach international understanding and peace. The German government, conscious of its responsibility, has drawn the logical conclusion and surely and definitely eliminated all Jewish influence of whatever nature it may be at home. It has thus contributed for its part to getting rid of an element which, in the words of the illustrious historian Theodor Mommsen, is, quote, an operative ferment of national disintegration, end quote. Haven't the Jews always served for fomenting national disintegration?
That's what they do, from the inside out.
They basically gut the nation within so it can be destroyed from without. Since I forget who the quote can be attributed to, but he said that no nation is destroyed or conquered from without until it guts itself from within. That's
a nation that stays homogenous lasts for an awfully long time.
Mm-hmm.
That there's all kind of, look at Ireland. That's a perfect example of that. A basically homogenous nation that's lasted for thousands of years.
Well, now we should call it a formerly homogenous nation, since there have to be at least 100,000 coloreds in Ireland by now.
Probably triple that from what I'm hearing, or maybe even worse.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing to Ireland what they're doing to Sweden.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doubt.
At the close of our study of the Jewish problem in Germany, the problem arises of what is to be done with the Jews. For it is evident that the effects of the policy of the German government towards the Jews cannot remain confined solely to Germany, but must be far-reaching. Anti-Semitism has been awakened in all countries where belief in the blessings of assimilation has been rudely shaken by the course of events and by the spiritual and political renaissance which characterizes the present era. The multitude of Jewish emigrants carry with them the Jewish question, with all its inevitable consequences, into such new homes as may be open to them. Hence, it is clear that the Jewish problem is susceptible of solution only on an international basis. The Jews themselves have unambiguously recognized the necessities arising out of the existing situation. The Jüdisches Nachrichtenblatt of December 30, 1938, wrote, quote, "For all who wish to see, it is evident that territories will ere long be required for the settlement, not only of Jews from Germany, but of Jews from other European countries also. Whoever is able to interpret current events cannot fail to observe the rapidity with which the Jewish question is becoming increasingly urgent in a number of European states and the consequent necessity of a correspondingly rapid solution of it."
And, well, right, but all those European states, sadly, were in the East and had their fill of the Jews. The West hadn't yet had its fill of the Jews. They still haven't had its fill of the Jews. Incredible.
It's like a man who pokes out one eye, and then he pokes out the other eye, and you still adore him, and you don't have an eye left to poke out.
Christendom is, it seems to be suicidal, but, you know, that's what Scripture says it would be.
The Antichrist has deceived the whole world.
Absolutely. And our kingdom has been handed over to the beast, Revelation 17:17. And
well,
that's time is now.
We were told that the kingdom suffers through violence and the violent seize it by force.
There's no doubt that when an entire civilization is just voluntarily hands itself over to its enemies, and that's what Scripture says would happen. That's the proof that the Bible is true. I mean, it's only one proof out of many, but it's crystal clear to me.
Hmm.
Once you see it, there's absolutely no doubt that that's what's happening.
Well, weren't they told, I think this is out of Matthew 21, that the stone which the builders rejected, the same has become the head of the corner. This is Yahweh's doing, and it is marvelous in our eyes. Therefore, say I unto you, the kingdom of God shall be taken from you and given to a nation or people, bringing forth the fruits thereof. Whosoever shall fall upon this stone shall be broken, but on whomsoever it shall fall, he shall be ground to powder.
Yeah, well, you know, the end time prophecy, our enemies will come in like a flood, but they'll all die here. Ezekiel chapter 38. And that's the only Christian hope. And a firm and trusting Christian would know that Yahweh is true and that'll happen.
All right.
That even though we seem to be up against incredible odds and at a total loss without resources, that we are going to prevail.
It has already been said that the projected creation of a national home for Jews in Palestine will not afford a solution of the Jewish problem. What is needed is to find territories, the ownership of which is not, as is the case in Palestine, claimed by others, territories which by virtue of a general agreement shall be allotted exclusively to the Jews. This need is reflected in the fact that even in England, the mandatory power herself, the possibility of settling Jews in overseas territories is envisaged. Germany, having no colonies, is not in a position to make any effective contribution to these international discussions. Racial characteristics and historical destiny combine to render it somewhat more than problematic that the attempt to solve the Jewish question by means of the creation of a Jewish state can ever hope to be successful. We have exposed this point of view in detail when dealing with the problem of Palestine. In the long run, it must depend on the Jews themselves and on their immense financial power whether the united efforts of the Western countries to find a solution will be fruitful or not, whether after 2,000 years of incessant wanderings, Ahasuerus will eventually find rest. And Wiebe ended on that note.
Yeah, and I don't know. I you know, there's a cultural context there. There must be. But I don't really know his, understand the Ahasuerus reference. Ahasuerus is actually a, the phrase appears in Nehemiah, but it's actually a Persian title.
Would you like to give us some background information on Ahasuerus?
Well, it was just, it was the Hebrew transliteration into English of the Persian transliteration into Hebrew of our, what the Greeks called Artaxerxes. It's nothing really. I just don't understand why he's using it in this context.
I wonder what Wiebe would say today about the fact that the Jews have been given their homeland in Palestine, yet the world is still under the heel of the Jew.
Yeah, right. You would think that they would all be there and leave us alone, right?
They had no intention of ever doing that, though. Hitler realized that. The Jew simply wanted a corporate headquarters.
Of course, and he got one, and his he can hide his criminals and train new ones, just like Adolf Hitler said he would, and history has shown it. That's exactly what has happened.
And with their control of Palestine, they're able to strike out at their neighbors, assuring a continual stream of refugees, and no other country will accept these people except the bleeding heart liberal white Western countries.
Well, of course. You don't see China taking in refugees from anywhere. You can't move to China and marry a Chinese girl and settle down and have a family. They tell you to get the hell out of here. They have more sense than most Americans do.
And the Jews also wreck our national image in the eyes of the world, don't they? Through their actions with the state of Israel against their neighbors.
They do. I mean, the Iranians, I mean, by no means do I agree that we should be allies of the Iranians, all right? But they call, the Ayatollah Khomeini called America the Great Satan. He knew who we were controlled by. He knew how he was using that term.
Well,
and it was absolutely true.
By association, we have become guilty.
Well, that's why the Book of Revelation calls us the Great Whore. That's what we are. That great whore, that's us. Israel's the bride, but Israel's also the whore.
You can't possibly get into bed with Satan without becoming a whore.
Well, absolutely. And that's true on a personal level in your everyday business. And it's true on a national level.
All right. Do you have any closing thoughts? I imagine we're at the point where we're ready to wrap up.
No, I just hope that we elucidated mostly that all the problems that confronted Nazi Germany, that Germany tried to confront and to cleanse itself of, have also confronted this nation, but the American people and the English people and the Canadian people, all the other white nations, have actually embraced those problems and haven't even seen them as problems. in most cases.
We've considered these.
It's destroyed our race and our culture and our civilization.
I'm going to say, we've considered these curses blessings. The Jews have been nothing but a blight upon this nation, upon our people, yet we regard them as somehow the canary in the mine, so to speak. If something bad happens to them, something bad will certainly happen to America. We must bless them if we wish to be blessed.
Right. And look at what all this blessing the Jews has got us.
I mean, as a nation, we cannot stand much more of this kind of blessing, can we?
Not much. Look at Britain. I mean, Britain was a great empire 50 years ago, 100 years ago. And it's all gone.
They blessed the Jews.
Yes. And in the 70s, Britain was practically reduced to a third world economy. I mean, Britain, you know, the economy in Britain really got pretty bad for a while. And they bounced back. But look at all the muss they've absorbed, too, while affecting that bounce back economically. I mean, I don't think that the cure is worse than the disease.
How so?
Well, the importation of all the immigrants.
Oh, that. I thought you meant the cure of the underlying issue, which would be embracing Yahweh as the cure.
Well, no. In Britain's case, to bounce back from its economic woes that it had in the 60s and 70s, it's basically absorbed a lot of immigrants to help prop up its economy, and the cure is worse than the disease.
Oh, yes. In that instance, yes. But most people look at the U.S. today, or maybe Britain in the 70s, Argentina in the 90s, and they see the economic catastrophe which caused national crisis, and they think that the national crisis or the present state of affairs in this nation can be attributed solely to economic factors. Would you agree that a lot of people make that mistake?
Absolutely. And somebody in the forum said that Britain was a Jewish empire for 250 years. And there is no doubt that Jewish capital did not drive the empire. British imperialism was at the behest of the Jews. There's no doubt. That's absolutely true. Just like American imperialism is at the behest of the Jew.
We have assumed the role that the British Empire used to fill. Since they left a void, they left a vacuum when they collapsed, or rather when they were forcibly collapsed by international Jewish finance. And now we have assumed the role. Instead of British soldiers dying for Jewish commercial interest, it's now American soldiers.
Well, right, because they wore Britain out. And now it's American soldiers. And next it'll be Chinese soldiers.
And if America ever dares to speak up too loudly, let alone think about rising up, the Chinese will be here to tell us how things are going to be.
Well, hopefully it won't get to the point where there's Chinese imperialism, but that is the next step in the Jewish plan, Chinese imperialism. And it's already, you know, it started, but it's only commercial right now. And military is the next step.
And Pilgrim has called in. Are you there, Pilgrim?
Oh, hi. I just gave up on the crashing, so I thought I'd listen on the phone.
Oh, okay, sure.
Thanks.
I say that there can be no doubt that the idea of resettlement has proven a dismal failure. The Jews never had any intention of giving up their control over the money markets of the world. In fact, they've tightened the noose, and they're now strangling our race.
Absolutely, and Palestine has just been another scam to extort billions of dollars from us.
Since we're now required to perpetually subsidize and sustain the existence of that miserable nation, which isn't really a nation, but it's essentially a collection of thieves living on land that they've stolen from the rightful inhabitants.
Absolutely. Okay, I'm about done with this topic. I don't know about you. I don't know if there's more I could say.
Well, just I wanted to cover real quick the issue I was discussing about how most people attribute the failure of America right now to economic factors, yet that would totally ignore the racial, cultural, and moral issues. And no nation is built upon economics alone. Would you agree? People don't gather around and say, let's build a nation upon an economic ideology.
No, this nation wasn't built on an economic ideology. It was built upon Christian principles and an ethnic ideology.
In the immutable nature of race.
Absolutely. All the founding fathers wrote about how many Saxons could possibly inhabit this nation and this continent. Benjamin Franklin had projected figures for 50 years. He projected from the mid-1700s that in 50 years there would be more English Saxons in America than there are in England.
And one thing, Stoddard and Grant pointed out that the idea created in the beginning in the 1890s, 1910s, and so forth, that we needed all these immigrants to grow is erroneous, since they correctly pointed out that our population was doubling roughly every 10 years in the mid-1800s, but that with the emancipation of the Negro and the rapid arrival of millions of Jews from Eastern Europe, the white Anglo-American's perspective for the future, his prospects, his outlook, diminished. He didn't want to bring children into a country that would be populated by so many Negroes, Indians, Mestizos, and Jews, and he was being displaced as well. He now had to compete with other races, so he had less children while they had more, and Grant points out that had we not opened our borders to all this trash, our country would have continued to grow on its own and would have actually had a population larger than what it had at the time he was writing.
Well, absolutely. But I mean, all of the immigration, I mean, where I lived, we were overrun with aliens. That didn't stop me from having 6 white babies. And I'd have probably had 9 if the government didn't take me out of the game.
That's generally the exception, though, wouldn't you agree?
Is it the exception? Yeah, it's sad, but it probably is the exception.
All right. Well, I think this has been a very great series. Thank you, sir, for making this possible.
Thank you, and I'll look forward to discussing the Frankfurt School next week if you want.
Yahweh bless.
God bless. Take care. Thanks all.